This week on RSBNB Update, Holiday Rare number 2 appears, a green Santa hat. We discuss the motivations for releasing it and just how rare it actually is. Then, Elder God Wars banter is back, as is Ichlurin. Who's coming back to life? Finally, our best updates of 2021. This is RSBNB Update, episode 860, recorded Thursday, December 16th, 2021. The Green Santa Hat, a rare well done. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. This week, a number of surprises in RS to deal with, and I didn't think we'd be having this big of a show this week, but lo and behold, aren't we, Tanis?
A little more than I expected.
Yeah. Of course, we're talking about the Green Party Hat and the resumption of the God Banter dialogue, and to help us discuss that and to float them some theories around. Boy, I'm jumping over that right there. Questscaping and Zerdones. Welcome to the both of you.
Hey, hey.
Hi.
Two Clan Quest members who helped us with our monthly bit in which we talked about the hypothetical end to the Elder God Wars. We'll do another check-in with that and see how we feel about our theories and where we might have gone wrong. And the one thing that we didn't talk about in that episode seems to be coming to fruition, but all of that, of course, in good time. If you're joining us for the first time, check the show notes out at update.rsbnb.com. You can join our friends chat in-game Bits Bytes. And we also have, of course, the Discord, which has been hopping recently. Just visit rsbnb.com/discord, and you'll get funneled into that. But before that, obviously, we have Frank's Free Deaths going on this week with God Wars, God Wars 2, Nex, and Telos. I don't think there's much to say with that. Not much to write home about. But what everybody, of course, wants to hear about is the surprise that was announced last Friday. There is another new rare for the holiday season, and this time it's the Green Santa Hat. And, you know, I saw this and I thought, you know, everybody thought that the Gold Party Hat was going to be the rare of the year. No, that's actually the common item. The Green Santa Hat is the rare item of the year. So... Uh-huh. So, I'm going to ask, does anybody want the Green Santa Hat here more than I do?
How much do you want it?
He wants it pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
Ooh.
Pretty bad for numerous reasons. To the point where I'd be willing to engage in good trade deals and barter practices with anybody who'd be willing to discuss that. But, you know, I don't currently have the 3.4 bill-ish cash on hand to be able to buy one outright, but it is something I'd like to obtain by the end of the Christmas season.
Oof.
So the way it works is he has a checking account and a savings account, and he's got all of his money in his savings account, and he needs a few days to move that money around.
Yeah, we could talk about that. We could talk about that being one way of doing it. But what happens and how you get this is that through playing the game, you get pieces of Christmas wrapping paper, and it averages out to 2.5 presents an hour that you're able to obtain from Posty Pete, just playing the game regularly. And for each treasure hunter key you use currently, you gain an additional 40 wrapping paper, and you need 200 paper in total for one present. So that puts us, based on what the time is at, 2.5 presents per hour, or 5 treasure hunter keys for one present. Now, how do you guys feel about there being another rare in-game? Because this feels relatively uncommon currently, doesn't it?
Yeah, they seem to go through phases with rares of deciding it's a really good idea and then backing away from it. And we're in another phase of it's a good idea.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they've made the... a lot of the treasure hunter cosmetics, like they just did Rainbow's End again, that's why it's top of mind, but those cosmetics are quote unquote rare. Like, it's not rare in the same way, but.
Yeah. It's rare to be an early adopter essentially.
Yeah.
But then it'll be wheeled out again and again.
Well, and the consequences, they go through price cycles, but maybe that's something we'll talk about later.
Yeah. And, Do you guys want to talk about the idea behind rares first, or do you want me to take you through some of the numbers first? Because I can go either way first. Hannes, which would you prefer?
Let's kind of talk about the idea of of rares and why they are so damaging to the economy.
We go back to 2001, I believe it was, and we had the initial run of party hats. Then we had things like the Santa hat, the red Santa hat. We had the Halloween mask and whatnot. And then starting in 2004, they stopped doing rares. And that was the last rare for a long, long time. And then we have lots of other ones like the fish mask, which is downright ugly, the crown and cloaks of seasons, Christmas tree hat, just to name a few. Then we have the big kahuna of the black Santa hat, which I believe is currently around 24 billion GP in value, which dropped in 2015, I believe it was. I think that was Christmas 2015, with a 1 in 2,000 drop rate from the crackers that year. And overall, it seems as though that they weren't doing rares because they didn't want to create a situation where somebody would, you know, in effect start playing the game and then ultimately miss out on it and then be upset. Because this was the... I remember this being the prevailing idea in Christmases 2004 and 2005 and whatnot when they stopped doing those. But Zerdones, you and I were actually kind of chatting a bit before everybody else got here about this and the way rares can be perceived in different games compared to RS, and that, you know, maybe at some point we need to be moving into a world where the holiday rare items and the holiday items are just general holiday items.
What? Yeah, I mean, like, speaking for myself, I took a long break from the game, and I missed, like, I missed the Black Santa hat, I missed the Zombie Walk, which is the other one, the Assassin Walk, which is the one that everyone's clamoring for now. Like, I missed all those. So I love the opportunity to bring some of these rares back into the game and make them accessible to new players or players who just weren't around at the time. Or even, like, players who were around at the time just didn't get them. Like, I was reading about some of the quote-unquote rares that they've reintroduced with this event that had a limited supply. Like, it wasn't just that it was rare to get. There were a fixed number of them released into the game in initial release.
And now most of these have, you know, hit rock bottom GE value when it comes to the token values associated with them. So
absolutely.
Okay. That's one thing that came to mind. Tanis, you mentioned ruining the economy. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I've kind of been a little bit sarcastic, but...
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't love the idea of rares because... Here's my peccadillo of rares. Every time they go up, then we get a very vocal group. I would say by nature would have to be a minority, right? Rare items. That really start making their voices heard, and I just think it's a small issue in comparison to the health of the game.
Okay. And, you know, there is another caveat as well, and this has been talked about, that, you know, currently we're on the advent calendar, of course, and each day there's a different Treasure Hunter promotion. You get the 40 paper with each key you use. But there is also the idea that, you know, what happens after Christmas and Advent is done. There's two different items. There's a wreath head item that was put into the game's cache this week, which is actually on the GE if you grab the GE items. And there's a Christmas wrap scythe as well. So with that, you really have to question, okay, we have a green Santa hat, but where is this scythe going to come into play? Where is the wreath going to come into play? Are these going to be Treasure Hunter rares that we're going to get at some point leading up to Christmas, or maybe in the week after Christmas from the 25th to the 31st? Or are those going to also start dropping in these boxes as well alongside the Green Santa hat? And are we going to have not only the Green Santa hat and Golden Party hat, but are we going to have two other rares as well this year? And Obviously, we don't know what the drop mechanism is going to be on those, but I think there's still a lot of unanswered questions about just what the ultimate end game is for the Green Santa hat here.
It feels a bit excessive now that you mentioned the wreath is available.
And the scythe.
Mm.
Yeah.
It wasn't, wasn't the Holly Wreath and...
No, these are two new ones.
No, I know that, but I'm saying the other ones, didn't they come out the same time as the Black Santa hat? It was the same
year. It
was
the Christmas scythe, yeah.
It was the Christmas scythe and the Holly Wreath.
Yeah.
So it would track then, right?
So it would stand to reason that they would do more then on that same vein.
Right.
And my question to you guys, does that change your opinion on anything? Given the fact we have, effectively this year, a suite of four new rares coming out.
Honestly, yeah. It feels like a bit of an oversaturation, really, because if we're going to be in something like 2023 December and with four new rares each year, hypothetically, that feels just like... there's enough shady stuff that goes on with the rares market already, and to essentially blow that up, or maybe it does split demand among the four, but I imagine people who are going to be hoarding rares are probably going to be over all of them. So the more you have, the more that shady stuff gets magnified, essentially.
Okay. Now here's the economics angle on this. And Zerdones, you mentioned you kind of saw something that was kind of veiled in a kind of conspiracy theory similar to this on the subreddit. So take what I'm about to say with a grain of salt, but there's some economic merit to it. What has been the number one complaint to people recently? The number one complaint has been that rare items, party hats and whatnot, and other big items in game are part of the inflation problem. Now, we don't know if this is actually going to happen, but there is a case to be made that by adding more rare items into game, you can dislodge some of that money that's sitting around in the other rares in game and use and get it moving throughout the economy, in particular targeting things like the Green Santa hat.
Oh, Shane, you and your supply side economics.
I don't even know if it's supply side. I think it's just basic economics.
You're adding supply, and there's no natural demand for new rares.
It has the potential to force the people who have rares and other massive amounts of assets that are just sitting there to actually use them.
Honestly, I don't think so, because...
Yeah, I mean, only if there's a demand for it.
Yeah, new rares are going to be very hard to dislodge prestige-wise.
Yeah, I mean, realistically speaking, like, we can look at the prices of current... Like, I actually had this conversation with a couple of people in Playing Quest the other day, that there are a couple of party hats that we don't know what they're worth.
Right.
Because it's literally impossible to trade them for quantifiable value. They're above not just max gold cap stack, but above max spirit shard stack.
Which is a problem when you think about it. And,
no one's going to be.
And
that's a tangential problem.
Right, and it comes down to the fact is the people who have these, are they going to be willing to, in effect, move some of these around? Not necessarily to, people in our neck of the economic woods, but just in general around that area. Are these items just in effect stuck in limbo? And that's the question. That is my bigger question with this is, can things like the Green Santa hat and whatnot be used as a bit of an economic catalyst on that?
I'm
skeptical.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is ever going to be selling a blue party hat for a Green
Santa
hat.
No, of course they're not. The idea would be is that if somebody was using... saying they had a Green Santa hat or they wanted to get the Green Santa hat, but if they had, for example, a white or something and, needed to, in effect, break that down to, say, a yellow or a green instead, that would cause those items to move. And all I'm saying is that the Green Santa hat, for example, could be a catalyst for some things in the economy to move.
Rares as their own currency, hey?
Exactly. Exactly. I think in kind of a very obtuse way.
I think that's sort of addressing the symptom, but not the cause, though.
Right. And we are talking about all this, of course, without knowing what the true endgame of the economic impact that Jagex wants to take in 2022 will be, because we know that's going to be one of the huge planks is addressing what the economy does.
Mm-hmm. So, I wonder if they have a way to tell how many rares are actually in essence.
Oh, they can.
Because the people don't play, they haven't played in the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
So
it'd be really easy
but that's something that people don't know. So
no. Right. People don't know.
But it'd be really easy to value it
from their side to say, you know, how many people haven't logged in 10 years and have one of these items? It'd be really easy for their data team to figure that out for them.
So could this be more of a way of addressing something like that?
Yes.
It's not really the economic side. It's the,
but that is the economic side of it. Because it all factors into the greater picture.
Well, I was thinking more like those items are just not in the game. So whatever initial drop was, it's a lot less than that.
And that's what I meant by items in limbo. And with that, maybe the Green Santa hat can
supply.
Maybe that with that, the Green Santa hat can address some of that. That's the angle I was going for on that.
Okay.
The theory that I saw on the subreddit that you alluded to earlier, Shane, and which, I mean, maybe this is just my wishful thinking talking, but I find it more convincing to my mind, is the theory that it's underpinned by something that Modhuli said in a comment on the subreddit, which is that the Green Santa hat is not necessarily going to be a discontinued rare.
Right.
They're not, they haven't committed to anything, but they are open to bringing it back in some form.
We don't know how, and we don't know when.
We don't know how, we don't know when, but the indication is that this isn't going to be like the Golden Party hat. This isn't going to be like the Black Santa hat, where
it's one and done.
Some number are released into the game over the next month, and that's all you get for the rest of time. So the prices gradually go up to infinity.
That's going to undercut it already. Mm-hmm. Like right there.
And the problem with that is nobody has heard that aside from the people outside the Reddit and listening to this podcast.
Right. It hasn't been officially announced. Yeah. It will sort of affect the price later on. Like, we've seen similar things with, like, I mentioned the Rainbow's End tokens. The same thing happened with them. Or Zombie Walk, when Zombie Walk was briefly obtainable on Treasure Hunter again, its price tanked.
But I think... things like these circle by word of mouth. So the people who are like heavily invested in buying rares will know, essentially. The people who will potentially be using rares as currency, as brought up earlier, will probably know because this is something they're very heavily invested in, the rares market.
For sure. The theory that I read was that this is the fact that Jagex is introducing a seasonal rare with the intent to bring it back could be a beta test for bringing back past discontinued rares, undiscontinuing past rares in a way that doesn't completely crash their value.
Are we talking about the original party hat set?
Liquidity to the market.
Oh
yeah,
my
so
God,
like the party hats,
right.
Like the masks. And like maybe this is my wishful thinking talking, because like personally I really like the old school model where like they're not rare because every year you can get all the Halloween masks you want or all the Santa hats you want or whatever. And I've been very vocal that I really want RuneScape 3 to do this.
Yeah,
I don't think they will.
That's the Overwatch mechanic.
Yeah, in a sense.
So.
But it depends on how they reintroduce them.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's I don't think there's any way that the RuneScape community accepts that. I mean, I would love it personally. I think that would be great. But
what you would in effect do with that, and this, I don't know. Somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't this seem like a silver bullet to solving the inflation problem? If you knock down the price of all these discontinued rares, doesn't that also knock down the GP values that GP has? And everything associated? Doesn't everything, wouldn't everything just lose value across the economy if you did that?
I don't know if everything would lose value. Yeah. It would definitely be a band-aid on the fact that max cash is not quite good enough anymore. Like, it would be a band-aid on all the people calling for platinum tokens.
Exactly, exactly.
Because really the only things you need platinum tokens for are these tradable rares and the odd thing like the T95
dies
two-handed sword. Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of the dies, that's true.
I think
and bulk the root, orders.
Yeah, the root of the problem, I think, is really in just PVM and the amount of GP and the amount of algebras and just being able to get raw GP into the game. It's like from bottom up as opposed to top down.
Well, you know, the Elder God Wars fronts were actually really good with not, you know, inserting raw GP in. You can still, of course, get GP from things like when you alk the battle staves that you get, or you can alk the orbs that you get, or, you know, just in general, the salvage and whatnot. So I think the Elder God Wars were good at that, and I think the last number of bosses that came into game were good at that, and it would ultimately come down to how many people have these rares and how big of a problem it would cause if there'd be a huge riot amongst, you know, your top 0.1% of the population. But nonetheless, let's talk about some of the numbers here, some of the back of the envelope math on just how rare this might be, because I did some number crunching on this, and I actually had a look around at what 200 keys was able to do in terms of the paper behind it, the wrapping paper. So the sense that I got, and this seems to be confirmed by a lot of people, is that with the 8,000 paper, or roughly 40 presents that I opened, the purple present seems to be about 1 in 20 or so. And then that would put the gold present at significantly more rare than that. And the reason that's important is because the gold present has a chance of giving you either 50 mil or the green Santa hat. So let's just, for the sake of argument, say that getting a gold present was probably around 1 in 100, because I haven't seen one yet, and I think out of all the presents I've done since Monday, I've probably only seen 3 or 4 purple presents. You guys seen any purple ones since Monday?
No.
Seen a couple.
Okay.
Probably so, similar to you.
Okay, so about let's just say 1 in 20. Now let's just extrapolate gold at 1 in 100, because that makes the math a little bit easier to do. So if we put the gold at 1 in 100 in terms of the chance of getting a gold present, that would mean you need to turn in wrapping paper about 300 times in order to have a 95% chance of getting a gold present. Then, if we assume that the green Santa hat is a 50-50 drop between the green Santa hat and the 50 million GP drop, this would probably put the number of presents that you need to open in order to have a chance at seeing a green Santa hat somewhere in the 600 to 700 range.
You'd never be so disappointed to get 50 mil, would you?
I'd be disappointed with 50 mil.
That's what I'm saying. You would be.
I'd be disappointed with 50 mil with that, because that is about 3,000 treasure hunter keys if you were doing it that way, or 740 US dollars.
Yeah, when I first saw this, I was like, oh, well, I might throw a few dollars in, get some keys. I said, hey, Shane, what's the map look like? It's like $740. I was like, never mind.
Save your dollars this Christmas.
Yeah.
And compare this to getting 2.5 presents an hour when you're playing the game. So with 150 hours of gameplay, you should get your gold present. 150 hours of gameplay for a gold present, in theory.
But that's so stupid, dude. When we talk about the amount of hours for certain things in this game, as I can't. If I were to go through my Steam library, how many games could you pull out that you said I put 150 hours in?
Not many.
Yeah.
That's
in all honesty. RuneScape is different in terms of playtime in that it is a very AFK-able game. Like, there's a lot of games where your playtime might be active engagement, but in RuneScape it might be 80% AFK, 20% active engagement.
Yeah, RuneScape sort of borders on being an idle game at times.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's fair. It's just that the numbers are crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, double that for the gold sand and add 300 hours over the span of the Christmas break. I don't think RuneScape Mobile has seen a better convincing use case.
Hoo-hoo.
So, this is all predicated on the fact that we're assuming that throughout the entire Christmas period, the drop mechanics are going to stay the same. And furthermore, this doesn't mean that, you know, Jagex couldn't just give us a handful of presents on Christmas Day. They couldn't up the number of papers that you get from Treasure Hunter. You couldn't up the number of papers that you get from playing the game on Christmas. Nonetheless, it's a lot. And it's a very minute chance of getting one, you know, just right off the bat if you're going to go in there and turn in one present. And, you know, if you do wind up with a gold present when you turn one in after, you know, maybe just doing a set of dailies or something, you have impeccable luck and you should probably go buy a lottery ticket in real life.
Yeah.
Or don't, because there's not even luck.
Right. Yeah, because if Shane doesn't get this, then it's really rare.
Well, I actually don't want people to talk about it because I think if people talk about it, it's actually going to ruin my chances.
Oh, I will say, I have heard about this and I looked it up just to confirm. There are people talking about a Treasure Hunter promotion from the 25th to the 31st.
Yeah.
We can get extra wrapping paper.
Of course.
As well as the Frosty
Wreath. Hasn't been confirmed yet, of course. So that's why. That's why I'm, you know, predicating all this with a huge pinch of salt.
Shane says this to preserve his green party hat gains.
Santa hat gains. But hey, but I mean, if somebody, you know, drop me off in the next 2 weeks a green party hat, I'd, you know, take that and happily not say anything else for the rest of the year. So
wink, wink.
No. Because that was the original goal back in the day was the green party hat, but. You know, green Santa hat's close enough, right?
Long as it's green.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you could end up with a set of them, Shane. Get the red, black,
that's
and
the
green.
Idea. That's the idea, yeah. And why I don't want people to talk about it, because it looks too perfect otherwise.
That'll be like the Kwanzaa hat then, right? Isn't that the Kwanzaa colors? There you go.
Interesting.
Oh, you're right, it is.
It might be red. I don't know. We played trivia for a holiday party at work that came up. I got it wrong.
Oh.
So, you know, hey.
Okay.
You have been taught.
All right. Let's move on to the patch notes then. Appearing in the patch notes were the hot fixes we talked about last week with Secret Santa, but I'll just say them again for anybody who missed it. Stacks of gift items in Secret Santa can now be split between multiple recipients, and items gifted by Iron Man will now be given to other players, though Iron still cannot claim a Secret Santa gift. For daily challenges, fixed an issue which allowed Iron Man accounts to receive combat dummies from the daily challenge system. That's important.
Hmm.
On Amanishi, the world map has implemented a new categories under activities-boss encounters, where the drop-down category will now include boss encounters, elite dungeons, and raids.
That's an interesting
one. It is an interesting one. And, I mean, I guess you could see that with all the Elder God War stuff and where all the elite dungeons are and, you know, Mazcab raids and whatnot. Wonder if we'll be getting any more elite dungeons in the future. Because sometimes they put these things in before they're needed.
Yeah, I remember Elite Dungeon 3 had its bank preset names up ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. For the Elder God Wars dungeon, the Scripture of Jazz will now store damage after all combat calculations are performed. As a result, it will now correctly store damage from damage over time abilities and account for damage modifications such as vulnerability. This is another change that makes the Scripture of Jazz more palatable for people on the high end. We had a good discussion about when you might choose full over jazz, but I think jazz is ultimately just becoming a comfy catch-all unless you need the AOE effects of the Wen book. In addition to the 30K cap increase that we had a few weeks back. So I'll say this again. If anybody does combat and you have around 15, 16 mil sitting that you want to spend on an upgrade, the jazz book is a pretty good thing to purchase. Okay. The chance of receiving a unique drop from Krosis has been increased slightly. And the chance of receiving a unique drop from the Archglacier has been increased slightly. And before we started recording here and before the year wrapped up, I was hoping we would get that post they were talking about on Elder God Wars drop rates.
Yeah, that was promised for this week, hopefully tomorrow.
Yeah. And I mean, if not, maybe we'll attach this into the show notes at that point, because I don't know about you guys, but to me, this patch note really means nothing right now, because what is slightly to one person is something completely different to someone else.
People will still complain about going dry.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, they're ultimately drop chances at the end of the day, and people need to, you know, have a correct understanding that you're not guaranteed to get anything after a certain amount. It's just, you know, the chances of that certain event happening in isolation.
That's not how probability works.
Oh, did you ever take a fun stats course?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they're quite interesting, and they change the way you look at things, right?
Yeah.
Was yours practical or theoretical?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
It was the first basic kind of stat class.
All right, fair enough. And finally, the reward for scaling higher in rage and higher kill streaks has also been made more lucrative at the Archglacier, while removing some value from lower in rage and kill streak drops. And this bothered some people on launch day, but Jagex fixed it at the end, so they'd be able to continue their streak with the old mechanics that were in place. But effectively now, what this has done, from talking to people on this, it has made lower in rage. I think the threshold is about 200. Anything below 200 in rage at the Archglacier, it has made it slightly less profitable, to the point where you might not even want to consider doing it. You might just stick with 5 mechanic normal at that point.
Oof.
So, but, you know, you look at the streaks people always post at Archglacier, and it makes sense why they did this. So, and there's always been, and I think you guys have also seen this, is there's always been the talk in Clan Quest, at least, that people are always upset that they're not getting, you know, the Dark Nihilus, or it's taking forever to get the Frozen core. And hopefully this will fix that to make the drops that people want a little bit more common in that regard at the higher end rages that people are doing. So fingers crossed on that. Once again, would be nice if we had drop rates to go along with this, and if they are, we'll pin that in the show notes for this week. On the mobile client, for the God Wars reputation interface, users can now see a preview of the description for each of the reputation unlocks. That's good. Now, Treasure Hunter had a bit of a bug with it. Treasure Hunter promotion rewards are now only affected by the multiplier of the promotion in which they were won, and the Treasure Hunter rewards are no longer influenced by the previous promotion's multipliers.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Sounds like people waiting until it's Rainbow's End to claim their 200 mil.
Yep, right? And then when Rainbow's End pops up, you get a times 4, or times 5, or times 7. Hey, that 200 mil becomes a whole lot more.
Woohoo! Inflation, huh?
Yeah, GP coming into the game through Treasure Hunter. Who would have known? I wonder how common this was.
Not, it's not Treasure Hunter. It must be it's all that skilling.
Oh, yep. God.
Yep, it's those damn skillers. They're making too much money.
Nerf skilling.
And to bust them down. Get them back in the mines.
Don't say nerf skilling, because Tannis will think you actually mean it, and bad things will start happening in the new year.
It's already.
Players are now able to scroll the Golden Party Hat list by using both the list and the scroll bar previously. If you moved your mouse into the gutter or on the actual list and you used your mouse wheel, you weren't actually able to scroll that list. You had to actually put your mouse over the actual scroll bar to make it work. So I just put this one in here because that was one of those little weird RSUI snags that we see from time to time.
Yeah, that one tripped me up a couple times.
Yeah, and you know, I didn't notice it until someone pointed it out to me, because maybe I'm just the person where I grab my scroll bar to do that. I don't know if that's the case, but the archaeologist NPC at the Acropolis has been removed in Everlight.
Budget cuts, man.
I would have no idea why they would need to remove the NPC.
Going on holiday.
I guess. I mean, some of them are, you know, kind of annoying when they start talking, but it's only, you know, a couple of words that they say.
I actually found out recently that one of those voices is one of my fannies.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, Cyan Ryder. He's one of the ones at Caradette, I think it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He has said he's the one right by the right outside the door of Caradette.
So how did Jagex do that then? Did they?
It was at Runefest, apparently.
Oh, they had them record a bunch of voices or something to that?
Something like
that.
Oh,
really? Wow, that's interesting. Who would have knew? All right. Neat.
So they're not just voices, they're our fellow players.
I'll see what we missed by going to the Archaeology Runefest, Danis. The island of Kamishima is now rendering correctly inside the player-owned port's map interface. All right. The offhand Shadow Glaive was dealing less damage than expected when paired with a non-glaive main hand, and this has been corrected. You know?
Huh.
It's a weird patch note, but I have to say, a few weeks back, this was actually affecting me.
Really?
Seriously?
Yeah, because I actually bought a pair of glaives to level up, because I needed the shadow components.
And
it felt like it was taking forever.
See, I'm like, who would have even thought to figure this out? And then, yep, okay, Shane.
Yeah, well, I just assumed that it was because I was doing weird things with using this in the offhand and using my Ascension crossbow in the other hand. And I thought, oh, I guess this is just how it's supposed to behave. I didn't realize that I was actually being penalized that much and that it was a bug. So
it's interesting that, because the T85s from Godward's Dungeon 2, they're specifically T90 damage, yep. T80 yep. accuracy, isn't yep. it?
Yeah.
So the accuracy is actually only determined by your main hand, I think, so you may as well use the T-AT offhand anyway. But it's interesting that apparently it was even worse than using the T-AT offhand would have been.
Yeah, and, you know, this is important to fix when you consider, and, you know, I'm putting this in a very, very narrow category, because the only people who need to purchase shadow components are the people who want the Chromic perk. So, but it's a very narrow category, but it's good to have fixed nonetheless. Speaking of perks, the scavenging perk will now trigger correctly on Prif Elves, and an issue has been fixed with the Sap Spirit Curse, which was draining 8% of your opponent's adrenaline rather than the intended 10% when
a PvP fix.
When it's actually used.
Mm-hmm.
Show me someone who's used Sap Spirit.
Yeah, I do PvP on the regular and had never heard of it before now. But I might.
Yeah, I mean, it seems handy.
Mm.
Yeah. Who knew?
All these people going around with adrenaline attacking you.
Actually, I'm looking at my purse now. I think leech adrenaline is your better choice.
Yeah, because the saps are worse.
Yeah. Because it gives you Adrenaline.
Updated the icon for the War's Retreat teleport, and the effect of the Pterosaur Maul will no longer boost abilities applied with Greater Barge if the player is not wielding the weapon. So this was a fun little way of being able to activate your ability with the Pterosaur Maul equipped and then switch off to a different weapon and still get the bonus damage effects of the Pterosaur Maul.
Yeah, I heard about this. Apparently, if you did this particular ability combination and switched from the Pterosaur Maul to a T95, you could effectively do tier 107 damage for three hits.
Yep.
That is wild.
Yep. And, you know, that's why it's been fixed here. And it, of course, also involved Greater Barge, which is another expensive ability. So we're talking, once again, at the very narrow margins of the RuneScape combat system. So, all righty. Well, we have some god banter here, but before we do that, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters for this episode, the last regular episode of the year where you'll hear this. So this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plox, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, Elomady, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Kesky Plays, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Pernasius, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Seth W., Singer, Staubeve, The Bears O.P., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., Zachary M., and Zant. Thank you all you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. You can check it out at patreon.com/rsbnb. We're very, very close to the $200 mark, in which all patrons will receive a special mail-out gift at that point, which we'll have more information on in the new year. We're very close to that threshold, so if you or someone else you know has been thinking of being on the edge, we're so close that we could potentially push to that over the Christmas season. And if you're wondering what you get with that, starting for as little as a dollar a month, you get a mention in our show notes, and you help fund the cost for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. Plus, you gain access to the entire back catalog of monthly bits. We're up to 36 plus of them right now. We did our last one talking about what happens next with RuneScape, particularly with the new executive producer and the pivot back to more transparency and involving the players on that. There was some fun discussion that Tanis Sirion and myself had with that. Always illuminating those monthly bits in a good way or sometimes a somewhat disturbing way. But nonetheless, have a listen to that one. That was our last edition there. We also have a tier where you can get for $3 a month, you get a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year, which at this point, we're going to be starting off again fresh in January, so you'll have a whole new fresh bank of clips to gain access to with that. But, you know, there's so many other fun things as well, like our roundtable. Did you enjoy our roundtable this past weekend, Tanis?
Yeah, it's always pretty. It's always pretty fun.
That was
nice,
our
fun free format.
That was our fun little trip across the channel.
Yeah.
Who did you have more fun watching, myself or Sirion fly?
Well, I watched Sirion because he was ahead of you. And he came in a little hot, and then watched Shane switch over to you, and you just like bud.
And we also got to see lots of fun little landmarks too, coming in over the channel and into London.
No, that I enjoyed.
Yeah,
Sirion was like pointing all this stuff out.
Yeah, it really shows off the fidelity of Microsoft Flight Simulator. But most of the time we're in RuneScape. Each and every month, that's a freeform conversation that patrons get to come to, and it's just a fun little chat. Think of it like an extended RSBNB update episode. So that's one of the many perks that you get. But nonetheless, if you want to support the podcast, you know a friend who might want to check it out at patreon.com/RSBNB. All right. Thanks so much, everyone. God banter. We thought this was done. And lo and behold, everybody gets surprised this Monday when the gods start speaking again at Centistan. Saren, Saradoan, Zamorak, an armadillo. But who appears in the room instead? Ichthyrin appears. And this was, I don't know, were you guys surprised about this?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because going back to our theories on this, we really thought he was, you know, kind of an unfinished business character, but we really didn't know where to put him in with this.
Mm-hmm. I think everything we considered had him coming back with something or someone from his journey, but instead he is going to do something down here on Gillinor.
Yeah, so what happens is that he says that he was searching all the plains in search of allies, and he said, if I had known how desperate the situation was, I would have returned sooner. And just to show how far out and how extreme this cause is, nobody will help, he said. No one, Saren, nobody will come. Sarah Doman says, what do you mean nobody? There are a multitude of inhabited worlds. Didn't you tell them what we are fighting? Ichthyrin says, yes, I told them. That is why they will not come. Against such a threat, they wish to build their own defenses and keep their own people safe. They will not sacrifice warriors for us. I understood their fears and let them be. I will never compel a world to fight a war against their will. It must be their free choice or it is worth nothing. Sarah Doman says, we've seen that too here on Gillinor. It's difficult for mortals to grasp the magnitude of the Elder God's threat. Then Zamorak cuts straight to the point and says, well, can you actually offer us anything beyond platitudes? And Ichthyrin says, do you want my help or not? And it turns out that he, of course, notes that our four gods in the Sentistan Cathedral have resorted to necromancy, and normally he'd condemn it. But he comes with an alternative, and Armadil says that anything that will replace this horror is welcome. And Ichthyrin says that his family once held a power that could temporarily restore willing souls to life as a last resort. He further says, my demigod brother Het used it as a form of amulet. He gave it up and allowed it to be forgotten many centuries ago. The potential for its misuse was too great. Normally, I would respect Het's wishes and defer to his wisdom, but given the circumstances, if you truly wish to resurrect the dead and give them another chance to fight, this could provide for a better path. Now, they point this out, that this would be a path that does not rely on mortal necromancers, and Sarah Doman says this would ease some of his fears. Then Saren asks, where is it? Ichthyrin says, it's deeply hidden near Al-Kirid in Het's shrine. Mortals call the area the Duel Arena. Then Saren says, recover it for us. Ichthyrin concludes this week's God banter by saying, please understand it was sealed away and forgotten for good reason. I don't know if it'll be safe to unleash on this particular battlefield. I will locate the relic for you, but I would prefer that it remain in my power until I can determine if it can be of use. Saren says that your terms are fair, and she accepts them, and sends Ichthyrin off. In particular, she says, now please, find it for us in a hurry. Armadil raises a question, are you sure, Lady Saren? Can we trust such an unknown magic? Saren says, we need it. If we don't find a way to make this fight sustainable with what we have, it will consume the life above, and then the elders will have won. So what are we talking about resurrecting here?
It's interesting because they've already been resurrecting in the most lovely, unhygienic sense of zombies. They've been doing that with the fallen Lumbridge God, the Arak God, all the humans. But who would it be here? I kind of wonder if this is a way to bring back all the old characters we love. Like,
that's the same theory I thought.
Dig up some Hazelmere ashes.
Yeah, bring Zanuck back for the ninth time.
Guthix is back, guys.
I think we're pretty clear that this wouldn't work on gods.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a soul thing.
Yeah, they have to have a soul.
Lore says
no. Yeah, the lore says no. Because that's actually the first theory I saw thrown about, that it could be someone like Guthix, right? But it won't be him.
No.
It's interesting, like, having to look at it now. It seems like this is going to be a sort of side story thing, where Inkthorin says he wants it to remain in his power, and it may not even be of use. It was sealed away and forgotten for a good reason. I don't know if it'll be safe to unleash on this particular battlefield. So we've got a question of if, first of all, is this even going to be useful? And caveat, is this going to be safe?
Yeah, will there be side effects?
Right. Mm-hmm. But the question is, who could you resurrect that would provide anything different to what we have?
Wait a minute, didn't he blow the shit out of the desert in the first place? Made it a desert? During the last War of Sorrows?
That was Tumakan. That was bad.
Okay. But it's just weird that would be happening again. With
Yeah. Desert is dangerous.
Bring your water skins, kids.
Yeah.
No, but seriously, I am struggling to find out who or think of who it could be.
I think maybe it's not so much who as it is why, because you've got zombies, but what can you do that you don't have with zombies? You have morale, you have the notion of being able to bring people back to have that fighting spirit again.
Right, because, you know, if they're zombies, yeah, they're just, you know, charging at them, right?
With the Crisis Front, a lot of it was the fact that things have become so downtrodden and hopeless. The fronts had changed and become, and the fights had become more desperate. If you have outright resurrection, people alive who weren't before, then that is actual hope, and that can be transferred to an edge in the battle. Whatever you can get, hey?
Yeah, Saren had a comment in one of the earlier God banters about group being kind of uneasy fighting next to what is essentially the corpses of their friends, which is a very valid concern. Like, I'd be kind of off-put, personally.
Yeah, and it felt like it was a moral question of using necromancy.
Yeah.
In that one, I think that's the one I'm remembering.
Yes, it was. My concern with that theory, Questscaping, is I like from a story perspective, it makes sense. I worry it's a little bit diffuse from a gameplay perspective.
Fair enough. Like, yeah. What do the players want?
Because then you're at a point where you can effectively say that the Elder God Wars just continue indefinitely, and we have, you know, not in effect resolved the threat. As, you know, you can resurrect these people, and you can, you know, keep them pushed back to a degree, but you're not getting any resolution from this. Which, you know, this is fine as another way of prolonging it, but it doesn't necessarily, in effect, move us closer to that off-ramp.
Story-wise, I think we get more attached to characters than to diffuse notions of morale and battle.
Yeah, of course. But
if you can bring back Duradel and have him do sick claw attacks on...
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was
thinking.
But
we're fighting Elder Gods. Would those guys really even have that much of an impact?
Fair enough, yeah.
Well, I feel like... So I don't want to give away too much from our monthly bit. Subscribe to Patreon if you haven't already.
Well, you can give a little bit away.
We were saying in the monthly bit that sort of, at least I was saying, my expectation for Eklarin was he's going to come back and he's going to effectively give us some breathing room in the fight against the... not the Elder Gods themselves, but against the Elder God front.
Right.
In some distance. Because that's sort of the direction that story is going.
Right.
Is towards us being overwhelmed.
And that's exactly what we got falling. Here.
Right, exactly. I was talking to Miss Alaska about this, and she made the comment that it's less Gandalf coming in with Rohan, it's more Aragorn coming in with the Army of the Dead. We're not winning the war, we're buying some time so we can deal with the real threat.
Mm-hmm. Because the weird thing of the Elder God Wars is that if you defeat the current armies, then these gods have it fully within their power to literally just create new beings from the soil. And so the victory has to be in some other form. And for the meantime, all we can do is at least stop them from getting to the eggs for the time being and buy us some more time to find some conclusive story victory.
Right. And, you know, on the same idea of buying time, this goes back to what you said, is that it's a whole lot more sustainable to actually fight with real mortals who are willing rather than, you know, just recycled zombies. Mm-hmm. So this, okay. So what this effectively means is that our dual arena update and our appearance of Ikhlorin come January will in effect be another aspect of us buying time and in effect just solidifying that, assuming of course this artifact works that he's going to unearth.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say something on the development side of things. I wonder if this, like, if Laren's solution didn't originally come from a different source. Like, maybe he did bring something back from another planet, but now that OSRS and RS3 have joined together on a group mission of getting rid of the dual arena once and for all, they decided, hey, let's incorporate it into this planet instead. And Laren can come back having found nothing, but hey, here's this cool thing in our grid.
And that raises the question, what will that be in January? Will it be something similar to the Battle of the Monolith? Will it be another mini game? What do you guys think on that?
I am expecting something dungeoneering related.
Oh,
whether it's an elite dungeon or it's something more like Demonheim. The reason I think that is because the clues we're being given are descending into an ancient shrine to find a magical amulet. That screams Indiana Jones.
Right.
Hey.
What if it was an archaeology-based elite dungeon?
Archaeology-based elite dungeon?
What do you mean by that necessarily?
Well, I mean, what if there was a... What if it was just an elite dungeon with an archaeology requirement on top of it?
And maybe dig sites around that, yeah. Maybe you have to clear the enemies to do before you can actually start digging.
Yeah, something like that.
Not maybe the easiest when being attacked.
Yeah. Because they have said they wanted to do more elite dungeons. We know that. But I don't know if that's something that they'd open the year up with right off the bat. Though they did say we might get more information on this next week. So who knows? We could just be talking in circles right now, and that could just float away and not be what it is at the end. Tanis, any thoughts on this?
At first I thought it was probably going to be some kind of a mini game, but I'm really not so sure.
In this day and age.
Yeah. I'm just looking forward to whatever the story ends up being. Because I really don't have any idea what they're going to replace it with. I'm not even sure that it needs replacing. Like, I don't think that they are, I mean, are they even convinced that it needs replacing? I'm just looking for the story, how it's going to be done.
All right.
As far as the Dual Arena goes, like, as a mini game buff, there is nothing the Dual Arena does well that isn't done somewhere else, essentially, apart from, like, being able to limit duels, but you can do that informally with a friend, maybe. And
being a sad
all the
casino.
Bad stuff. Yeah. All the bad stuff is sad, yeah. Casino and goodbye.
Okay. Back to the lore. One final question on this. Is there potentially more than this just, you know, in effect being employed to buy time? Could there be any other, you know, ramifications that we're not seeing yet? Because I think we all got the surface thing that this is employed to buy time. But is there anything else that either of you want to go out on the limb and say about this?
I want to say that maybe there are more people than Ikhlorin that would be after this, because I've seen comparisons to the Wand of Resurrection, which, you know, an alternative artifact for bringing people back, and in that quest, Death of Chivalry, you were fighting against Dawn to get your hands on it. And yeah, suffice to say, the notion of being able to resurrect people is something that people will fight over. And once you start digging, and once people start hearing rumors on the wind about what you're digging for, you might not be alone.
Well, right. And since we're talking about Ithlarin and Fett, something that has come up in a lot of the Q&A live streams is regarding old unfinished quest lines, is we're not Jayex has said that they're not necessarily going to do full on continuations of them, but might try and pull those elements into the existing storyline. So what's one of the big unfinished storylines right now is the desert. So could Amaska come into this somehow?
Ooh.
Because I'm sure we don't want her getting her hands on whatever this is. That would probably be bad.
Yeah, and that would be an entirely different track to the story that I don't think anybody was anticipating. Could this be another Elder artifact that we're not aware of, or we know that might exist by a different name?
Well, the Elder Gods did in Sliske's endgame, like, specifically spell out all of the Elder artifacts, if you ask. So I don't think it really fits with any of them, I think.
So I think the only ones that we haven't really seen yet were the template and the hammer.
Yeah, whereas Ithlarin describes this... Maybe. Ithlarin describes this as an amulet. Or at least my demigod brother used it in the form of an amulet. So it could exist in other forms, but what we're digging for is some kind of amulet.
Wait, was his demigod brother the one that...
Yeah, Het.
Huh, could it be associated with that? Like, could it have played a part in that?
So the backstory behind Het is that Tim McKenna and Lydnus, they want kids, they split up their divine essence between four animals, and you got the Menophyte demigod.
Menophyte pantheon, yeah.
Yeah.
Amasket?
Got Het, Krondis. Amasket is one of the, like, Ithlarin and Amasket are their own thing. And then you've got Het, you've got Apmaken, you've got Krondis, and you've got Scabaras. They're their own four, the little quartet. There seems to have been a fair bit of focus on Het, you've got dealing with Scabaras, which is the quest that is dealing with Scabaras.
Obviously.
You've got Crocodile Tears as your Krondris quest. I think Apmaken was involved in Do No Evil.
Yeah,
that
was the Monkey Desert quest, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so here we go, here's Het. And there was a bit of touching on him in Our Man in the North, which is set partially at the Duel Arena, but really there's not much else, so... Here we go. It's Het time.
Has been classed as the desert god, minor desert god of both mental and physical health.
Mm-hmm. The strong boy.
Yeah, which is the lore behind the Duel Arena, is it's a training area for the disciples of Het to show off their rockin' abs, I guess.
Which, when you think about it, that's a relatively minor lore implication with that, so that's okay if that's removed.
Also, it makes sense lore-wise for Het to be the one possessing this thing, which can restore vitality.
All right.
Actually, speaking on that, this is maybe a bit of a tangent lore question, but this is the first thing that sort of jumped to my mind. So Het has an amulet that can restore souls of the dead to life. Isn't that supposed to be Ithlarin's job?
Yeah, because that's exactly what he did with Zanik.
Well, because in the backstory, before the first God War, before Zaros, that was Amasket's job. Ithlarin shepherded the dead to the underworld, and Amasket said, pointed at someone and said, you are, do you want to be resurrected? And then when Amaskit became the Devourer, Ixalan sort of took that role over, which is why it doesn't happen so much. So, like, theoretically, Ixalan should already have this power, which begs the question, why do we need this?
Yeah, didn't something similar like that happen in one of the Halloween events in something 2013, 2014?
Yeah, something like that. And there's now a cat in the Soul Altar that is an NPC from that event that relates this lore to you.
Ooh. Interesting.
Okay. So the resurrection the resurrection bit then is 100% set then. We know we're going that direction. Before we move on, final guesses on who they're going to resurrect. Questscaping.
I'm just thinking it might actually be one person instead of many, right, because an amulet and being able to temporarily resurrect people, that's actually making me start to think one person at a time and whoever's wearing it.
That's a good thought.
All right, who?
No idea.
Okay, Tanis?
I'm at a loss, man. I really don't know.
Zerdones?
I'm going to deep cut. Let's say Gomal, the old doorkeeper to the Warriors Guild. Why not? Deep cut.
And I maybe we'll just say, I don't know. You need someone old. Someone with magic powers that can, you know, in effect, change things up.
Lucian
did come to mind. Sliskate came to mind.
No, I don't think it would be a Majorat, because they have the same problem as gods.
Okay. Okay, fair enough.
If I'm being serious, I think Hazelmir is a good show.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go. Hazelmir.
Yeah. I think that's a good show.
And you know what would be a fun roundabout way of asking this question? Would have been to ask when they were doing those lore streams a few weeks back with Mod Jack on them, is there one NPC you wish you could resurrect? That has been killed off.
Oh, because that's Jack's job. Raven kills them off, and Jack decides they're alive anyway.
I thought Jack's job was writing NPCs that are already dead that then have to be brought to life somehow.
That's the one.
All right. Well, presumably, maybe we'll have God banter throughout Christmas, and if not, we'll. Or if we do, rather, we'll catch up with all this as we head into January with our first episode. So we have a bit of a 2021 mini year in review for you guys right now. So we gathered everybody's thoughts about three categories in particular: update of the year, quest of the year, and patch note of the year. And also in a special category for Tanis, the accessibility update of the year, because that's something we had to talk about. So I'm going to start with you, Tanis. What was your update of the year?
My update of the year is kind of where it all began, and that is the city of Santistan. It set up Santistan archaeology and, you know, all of the fronts of the Elder God Wars. And even though I haven't completely completed it, I actually really enjoyed it as a good read, and someday Shane is going to drag my, I almost said something, but you're going to hold one of those lights for me. I think.
Yeah, of course, and, we can do that anytime you want. Anytime you want. Okay.
Yeah, but that's my my update of the year, just because it was such a, it was a good quest, and it kind of set up everything.
And that was also your quest of the year. Okay. And I actually put that as my quest of the year as well, just because, you know, going back, if we go back to when Santistan was first mentioned in one of the teleport spells from Desert Treasure, oh my God, going back to 2006 and hearing about that this might exist, and then Temple of Santistan, ancient curses, of course, and reestablishing communication with Zaros. This has been one of those storylines that that really didn't, you know, draw as much attention as the elves did. But once again, it was one of those things that took 14 years to come to fruition from 2006 all the way to 2021, 15 years at that. And when we got there, of course, you had the wonderful environment, you had the wonderful storytelling associated with it, and it just set so much up for the year. So City of Sintistan was my quest of the year. So it goes without saying that if you didn't have City of Sintistan, you wouldn't have had a lot of the other updates this year. My update of the year was Karapak and the Note on Front, and Questcaping, I believe you felt similar as well.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you feel like putting the Note on Front and Karapak there?
Because this was the one that really started to get things moving, and it felt like it introduced so many great things at once. It introduced, for one thing, the weekly god banter, which has just been incredible and in how it's kept me coming back week after week to watch and discuss. And they've had some really interesting content dropped in those little bits of overhead dialogue, as evidenced by the fact that we just spent however long talking about one today. And yeah, that was the beginning of that.
All right.
It was also the first one that just populated this as of yet empty City of Sintistan. And
yeah, because it was so quiet before then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now it is very, very, very much alive, because it was just a city without content. Pretty graphics, pretty environment, but empty. And now you've got so much incredible stuff. You've got God Wars generals who will perform battlefield abilities for you, which was utilized a little more later on, but never so much as with the initial update. And I do love just using Krill's Yar every so often when I feel like it.
The Gorvec one is fun too, that came with the Krosis Front, if you haven't tried that one.
I haven't tried that one yet.
It's Dragonfire.
Nice. But yeah, and so much inventive stuff, like the siege cannons. I really enjoy
upgrades.
Yeah. Yep. I really do just enjoy going ham on the Nodon Dragonkin by hijacking one of their own cannons. That's that still feels like a really fresh, inventive piece of content. And of course, there is Karapak himself, who is just lore-wise and fight-wise really just a pinnacle of RuneScape experience.
All right. And, you know, I should also say that I put Karapak in the Note on Front as my update of the year as well. And I'm going to approach it from a different angle than you did, because the reason I put that there is I actually credit the First Front with being a decent enough boss that's not too hard and not too easy, that it's actually been a place that is very consistent in terms of the mechanics and what you can expect from the fight itself, that I've been able to use that as a way to really develop my PVM abilities once that front came out. Because case in point, I went from 7-plus minute kills to the point where my kills are just over 3 minutes now on Karapak.
Hey!
Wow. So it's been a case study of using the Note on Front, and in particular the boss, Karapak the Bound, to develop my PVM abilities throughout that entire thing. And then that has then acted as a springboard, of course, to the other fronts as well and all of the other bosses in the game. So that's why I have to put Karapak in the Note on Front there for me. But
can I ask, your kill times, is that normal mode or hard mode?
Normal.
No. Yeah, so, but that says there's even more room for improvement.
Exactly.
Like Karapak will take you all the way through your PVM experience.
Yeah, and you know, that's a hallmark of a really well-designed boss.
Mm-hmm.
So, I want to turn this over to Zerdones, because, you know, I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk about where the year started with your quest of the year with as an Andra's quest. And you were with Questcaping on this one, and you came in here and you thought, "Oh, am I going to be the black sheep on this?" Only saying as an Andra's quest. But why did you both say as an Andra's quest for quest of the year? You first, Zerdones.
Sure. So I will say, City of Sintistan was a close second for me. I ultimately went with Ozymandias Quest for a couple of reasons. One reason is it really was a love letter to the lore fans, which I definitely am. Like, I'm very much in the target audience for that quest. That hit me perfectly. The other reason, and the bigger reason for me, is I think the goal of art, the goal of any art, is to make you feel something. And Ozymandias Quest made me feel something. I connected with the characters in that quest. I connected with Ozymandias. I connected with Ariadne and with... Oh, I'm completely blanking on the name now. Other Madara character.
Trindine,
thank you. Can't believe I... Okay.
No worries.
Moving on. I connected with her. I connected with all of them. And then the end of the quest just hits you like a punch in the gut. Because Trindine and Ozymandias are playing you for a fool. And that made me feel something.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the things that was really upfront with us when we discussed this back when this quest came out is there was a question of, are we, in effect, just witnessing this quest, or is our player actually taking part in it? And I think the way we described it on that episode was the RuneScape visual novel in that regard. And based on the fact you say you felt something with that, that would back that up entirely in terms of being able to touch all those emotional notes.
Yeah, that's not an invalid way, or that's not a bad way of describing it. It is a very dialogue focused experience, but it's very good dialogue.
Yeah. Questcaping, why'd you put Ozymandias Quest?
I battled between that and City of Sintiston because I did like Once Upon a Time in Gilnor. That's a really fun and inventive feeling quest, and we only have three to choose
four.
Four?
Once Upon a Time, Heartstealer, City of Sintiston.
Heartstealer.
And Ozymandias Quest.
Oh. Heartstealer was nice, but it's not going to make Quest of the Year lists for anyone but a very small minority. I know some people who love it, but yeah. Anyway, so City of Sintiston really feels more like the real appeal there was in what came next. Hence the Nodon front being my update of the year. But Ozymandias Quest was the full package rather than just a teaser. Here is a city, here is what we're not yet filling it with, was what City of Sintiston feels like to me. Whereas Ozymandias Quest, it got me. I am the lore player, I am the target audience, I am catered to, and I am happy.
Yeah. I wrote City of Sintiston as well, but there were so many wonderful moments in that quest from that memory fragment of Guthix's, where our character is the only one to truly know what happened at that point in the quest, to, you know, Ariane destroying those statues and huffing them in. That was absolutely hilarious as well in that quest. So many other little moments like that. You know, the Temple Knights angles, the questions of the Inquisition, and so on and so forth. So many little fun things were in that quest that were scratched.
Juicy plot hooks.
Yeah. So I can see why you guys both wrote that. That's good. Zerdones, update of the year.
Yeah. So what you were saying about Karapak being a boss to teach you PVM is pretty much the reason I chose this as my update of the year, and that is the Arc Glacier. As much as I like Karapak, and I agree with what you and Questcaping were saying, that the Nodon front is a really good and solid piece of content, and I think as a front, it's probably the most cohesive and the best front out of the Elder God Wars. It's very, especially Karapak, is very traditional. It's very traditional God Wars boss.
Yeah.
It's very traditional RuneScape boss. And the through line of all the pre-release stuff for Elder God Wars was, this isn't going to be anything like what you've seen us do before. And the Arc Glacier is the first time that promise was held. That promise was kept because they came in with a boss that it has a Tello-style hard mode and rage streak mechanic, sure. But the normal mode is onboarding PVM.
100% safe deaths.
100% safe deaths, toggle on mechanics. Do you want to practice your resonant switching? You can do that. Turn off everything except ice cannon, and you can just practice your keybinds to get your shield switches down. And I feel like PVM is, as I've progressed through the game, PVM has become increasingly important to me because it's sort of the end game content of RuneScape. But I don't feel like it's very well onboarded. You're mostly, there's a very big jump in difficulty from King Black Dragon to the God Wars Dungeon 1, and then from God Wars Dungeon 1 to God Wars Dungeon 2. There are very big gaps that you're just sort of tossed into the pool and said, there you go, sink or swim. And the way you get better is you go to YouTube and you watch Mike Rue, you watch
And how many of these guides, and I tried this, I looked at some of these guides, and I'm 100% with you here. They're not digestible if you don't know what the actual things they're talking about are. So I'm 100% with you on that.
Yeah, I found for me, I had to watch a video, do the boss, watch the video again.
And then maybe look some things up.
But then with the Yargleisor, we have, here are some basic building block mechanics of PVM. Here is a little sandbox. We've padded the walls for you. You can play with it. You can learn, and you can get better in this safe environment.
Yeah, and you know, there's so much more that needs to be done with PVM as well. And I 100% agree with you on that. And you know, I think the reason I personally didn't choose Archglacier for mine is that by the time that came out, I was already relatively comfortable with Karapak, but for people who are returning to the game, and you know, I say, hey, if you're doing your Slayer test, you maybe want to stretch a bit in terms of what you're doing combat related. Go kill the Archglacier, turn on a couple mechanics, and see if you're comfortable, and then see how you feel about that. So, 100% on board with you on that. But I also need to turn to you, Tanis, because the Archglacier occupies both your patch note of the year and your accessibility update of the year for one specific reason.
Yeah, how about that, huh? So when the Archglacier came out, it was challenging, but I saw that there was a lot of potential. Like in some ways, it was very inaccessible with its colors and things of that nature. But on the other hand, it was very accessible with the stuff that Sardones is talking about and being able to add and mix and match mechanics. That's not only, you know, a way to learn PVM, but it's also an accessibility feature. And that's what my pick for the patch note and the accessibility update are. Which was the only thing the Archglacier was missing was voice lines. And they didn't just put in, you know, audio cues like, and I would have been happy with that. That's all I was really asking for. But instead they put in full voiced lines that let you know what's going on in the fight, even if you can't see it well. And it blew me away.
Completely changed the boss for you, didn't it?
Yeah, it's you know, it's so much more. I said it then. It's so much more than a patch note. it was a really, really big deal. So yeah, that's my pick for both of them. I mean, how could it be anything else?
Yeah, and you know, I remember we gave this update such flack when it came out. I think you were doing 4th of July, or no, it wasn't 4th of July. It was a vacation or something. So you weren't able to be there with us for the launch of it. But we did have people on, and we did talk about the accessibility because that wasn't even an issue for us there. And it feels like it's improved so much since then. So that's good. And I think that's our general picture of the year, too, when it comes to accessibility. Mm-hmm. And we talked about a bit about this on the PVM episode that'll be out next week, is that we started off in a rough spot, accessibility-wise, for the God Wars fronts. But over time, things have improved. It's been baby steps, but it's been a consistent improvement, right?
There, yeah, and it's forward motion, and it's also just taking it seriously and trying to improve. That's all you can really ask for, all you can hope for, and it's, you know, we end up with great updates like what we got with the Arch Glacier here. I mean, you know, and they did it with Croesus. They listened. We're not quite there yet, in my opinion, but we're very close. And you know, that was a colorblindness issue. And they, you know, found their own, you know, solutions to it, but it's being addressed. And that's the big thing to me.
Yeah. Questscaping, you also put Croesus colorblind particles on your patch note of the year. Why did you put that there?
Yeah, I'm going to admit I couldn't particularly remember any particularly notable patch notes, and I just went with any I could remember. And I remember a lot of discussion about the accessibility updates that had been done to the old God Wars. I was actually... Another patch note I could remember was the voice acting at Arch Glacier, which a lot of lore people have been looking forward to for, well, we like voice acted content reasons. But I remember a lot of people finding it annoying and off-putting when actually implemented. But I had no idea that it had been that much of a transformative experience at the boss for you, Tannis. And that is a genuinely, wow, that's amazing thing.
Yeah, it was... very, very helpful. It changed the whole boss. Like I said, it gives you the opportunity to be able to navigate and mitigate mechanics without having to see those small, you know, graphical details, or the chat box, you know, for that matter. Because if you're dealing with field of view, being able to monitor chat box is just it's not really an option sometimes. I guess people will find something wrong with everything, but it was really good for me.
Yeah,
the voice having such functionality beyond merely just flavor.
Yeah, and it you can see right here with like the people that you're talking, like the lore people, accessibility updates are usually good for everybody. You know what I mean? Like it's everyone gets something out of it, and that's why a lot of times in RuneScape, especially, there are these little hidden kind of accessibility updates where they're not
skyboxes.
They're not necessarily like framed as, oh, this is an accessibility update, but in reality they are, and this is one of them too. Like you said, you know, the lore people were like, hey, we love voice acting, me too, but it was actually, you know, beneficial, you know, beyond that.
Yeah, I remember talk of River of Blood skybox being just absolutely game changing for people at Telos because they can finally distinguish the colors of the beams.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, and a lot of little, you know, things like that. But and that's why I'm glad that they're being very responsive. And that's, like I said, that's all I can ask.
Good. Zerdone's patch note of the year.
Mine's not quite so high minded. My patch note of the year was one of the Pymus fixes that actually came out in March, so late Christmas present from wonderful mod Pi. It was allowing auto-retaliate with the area loot interface open. That's just something that bugged me so much when I was doing Slayer, like at Abyssal Demons, especially at Dagonoth's. Like, you want some of the drops you want, but if you have area loot open and you can't attack, it becomes the juggling act of, am I going to take damage to get these drops? Am I going to hit these guys that are hitting me. It's just such a headache. It was such a nice fix. I appreciated it.
Yeah, now whenever you go do That's Slayer, you can just let that window sit open, and if something appears in that window that you want, you just give that a click.
Yep, absolutely.
Or, you know, further, just set your custom loot and just press that button every so often.
I will say I actually kind of find this a little annoying myself, because I like having my just general interface relatively clean, and I get annoyed if it isn't closing when I want it to close. And I think I've been dungeoneering on mobile just as a casual thing.
Oh my.
And really enjoying it, but it feels more adventurous than dungeoneering on desktop does, strangely enough. But also,
that's weird.
Trying to area loot things and having this big old area loot box over my already cramped mobile interface, and oh boy.
Yeah, and you know, that's more of a mobile problem than area loot or dungeoneering, because, you know, let's be real here. Mobile still has some UI issues and whatnot that are still hanging out, but I will admit that Audio Retaliate with the area loot open is a good thing. For me, my patch note of the year is the changes that were made to Emerald Backriminal Bolts, in particular, bringing them up in terms of their reliability, in terms of proccing the effect, and making it so that it's an actual on-proc extra poison damage rather than poisoning the target. But the real fun thing about this, and not enough people know about this, and we touched on it again in the PVM episode that'll be out next week, and why this is in my mind. If the target's poisonable and you have Cinderbane gloves, these Emerald Bolts will be doing more damage than Dragonstone Bolts.
Woohoo!
And not many people know that. And not many
You're
people know
that. You're bringing those to Telos.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, rubies still, of course, have their place. But for anybody who wants a good budget option, Emerald Bolts are the way to go, honestly, at this point. And they don't get enough of a discussion around that. And we'll have a full, of course, run through all of the PVM meta combat changes next week on the podcast. We already recorded that one. That one's in the can and it's ready to go. But that's my patch note of the year. And interesting how most of our stuff this year focused on combat in our year in review. Though I guess that's to be expected given the year, right?
Yeah, it was a pretty combat-heavy year. We got, six bosses?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot.
And now PVMers are not allowed to complain ever again.
Yeah, tell them that. Yeah, that goes.
All right. Moving on, we do have a few questions before we wrap your regularly scheduled RSBNB updates for the year. So the first one is from Stray, who writes, in the last couple of live streams, there have been mentions that the devs are aware of certain expectations concerning God of War dungeons. I assume they say that this is in reference to a fifth boss. Each front boss has been completely different. If a potential fifth boss were to follow the same pattern, do you think we could be getting a new elite dungeon? And if we don't get a fifth boss, do you think we'll still get boss equivalent rewards, say more tier 95s from whatever the final Elder God Wars dungeon update is?
I mean, there's definitely room for more T95s. Like we barely touched T95 ranged. We have the arrows, but no T95 ranged weapons. Armor is another area they could go into, shields.
Different
kinds of, like, dual-wield magic, for
instance. I was just thinking of how terrifying it would be to have tier 95 ranged, given everything that's out there right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'd necessarily expect it anytime soon, but there's definitely room for it.
Yeah.
Touching the other stars first for a good reason.
So we had Nex in God Wars 1. We have Telos in God Wars 2, which is solo. Do you think they'd go solo, or do you think they'd go group with this? Because we do already have a group encounter, a solo encounter for the Elder God Wars.
We have two. Well, like, if you're doing hard mode archetype, so then that's definitely solo, yeah.
I mean, I like the Elite Dungeon idea. would they do with both Duel Arena Elite Dungeon and fifth boss being Elite Dungeon? Maybe Duel Arena is the fifth boss? I don't know. I like the Elite Dungeon idea. I feel like if they did an Elite Dungeon, it wouldn't be solo, because that doesn't really seem to mesh with Elite Dungeons.
That doesn't fit with what an ED is. You're right.
I also want to say, like, lore-wise, the fifth boss has been not related to any of the gods previously, but some different and bigger thing. So for the first God Wars dungeon, that was Zaros. For the second, that was the Anima, the planet, essentially.
The Guardian, or the Warden.
Mm-hmm. And now what can be bigger at that same respect than all four Elder Gods?
Voss?
Well, I'll give you a hint. It starts with Axe.
No, we've been there before. I think it's been clearly said that everything Zaotac was finished with Elite Dungeon 3.
Never to be touched again, right?
So, I don't know about that. We'll see.
I don't know. I honestly think Elite Dungeon would be fun to do with that, but at the same point, I don't know if everybody who is anticipating fifth boss would be happy with that, though we did say the Elder God Wars was going to break the mold, so perhaps Elite Dungeon is the way to go with that. As for rewards, I personally don't want to see any tier 95s, because I think we just need to kind of hit the pause button on that right now. I think if you really wanted to make people happy based on what we've discussed recently, and you guys will be hearing next week, is that there needs to be something for Mali that allows them to recover adrenaline. Because if they had a adrenaline boost, kind of like how magic and ranged already do, then I think there'd be a lot of different things that people would be throwing up into the air and really starting to number crunch on. So maybe something melee related, because I feel like based on our discussion that we have that you guys will be hearing soon, is that it was kind of not necessarily in a happy spot for many in the PVM crowd right now. Tanis, what would you like to see from number five, if there's a number five?
I like the Elite Dungeon idea, but it doesn't fit the trend. And I'm trying to think what would fit the trend, you know, what's bigger than this whole Elder God Wars type storyline. Do we finally face an Elder God? I don't know. Gameplay wise though, I hope for an Elder or an Elite Dungeon. And I don't think it will be solo.
No, it can't be solo. And speaking of that, you and I are going on free death week for the Elite Dungeons, right?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. 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 Just have to ask that question again. All right, so it seems we are on the Elite Dungeon bandwagon, or perhaps we're just at this point not really thinking beyond what it could be, but I think Elite Dungeon would be the most mold-breaking that there is. And I don't think it will be at the Duel Arena. I think that's going to be separate, because everything else, boss number five for the previous two God Wars dungeons has been within that same footprint. So I think it'll be something Centistan-related. So, and
down.
Duel Arena side story.
Yeah, and they were very clear that there are certain things people expect that have not been scratched yet, so we'll leave it at that.
And, it does tend to be at the center, doesn't it? Well, it was at the center for the second God Wars dungeon. And Centistan Digsite sure did reveal a way to get to the Shadow Realm from the center of Centistan.
Yeah, it could be something shadowy related. Oh, boy. And what else has there been shadowy related? Oh, there's also that thing that people keep talking about, Voss, whatever that might be. So, if it was a boss, it could be that. Or it could just be a dungeon under Centistan. Who knows at this point?
Boss?
Ooh.
Boss.
That's a fun way to say it.
It rhymes. It must be true.
The boss.
Yep, that's
where it works. All right.
At the boss.
Next one is from VI Nightshade. Hello, podcasters. I want to know how I can do most content in the game except for Ambassador. He is the only boss I haven't done solo. Also, Questscaping is a cutie. I assume you're familiar with this person.
Oh, yes.
As a client quester.
I feel like you're doing this question a disservice by not somehow vocalizing the emoticons.
I don't want to vocalize those emoticons.
That's fair. That's fair.
Because I have a feeling I know what they are. And we kind of went there on that Halloween episode, didn't we?
Not about to crack open the uwu voice again?
Nope.
We are spared.
Which I'm sure people would love, but I'm not going to do that. Once was enough for you. Even my most trusted people who give me a lot of latitude for this show told me not to do that again.
Patreon reward.
Yeah, it's in the clips. It'll be on the clip show.
Of course.
I've only killed the ambassador once. Questscaping, have you killed the ambassador more than once? Maybe you can provide some input here.
Not outside story mode.
Okay.
The elite dungeons are outside story mode are not something I've touched very often.
And, you know, perhaps this was a bad week to ask these questions here about this, since we're not that tier of PVMer right now for this. But, you know, the best thing I can say to do on this, and this is speaking from my personal experience with Elite Dungeon 1, is that the first time I went to Elite Dungeon 1, I had a Royal Crossbow and tier 75 Armadale armor. And I had no idea how my abilities worked. I had no perks, no nothing to that effect. And I don't know what your exact current setup is, Nightshade, with this, but I can say that after I got some relatively modest perks with Ancient Invention and just put together a good ranged ability rotation, even things in Elite Dungeon 1 became a whole lot easier with that. So I would say, based on this, let's have a discussion in the RSPVM chat in Clan Quest, and with that, we'll be able to better provide some impact assessment of what your current setup is and what might be going differently. But I do also know that there's a good number of people who will happily take people to the Elite Dungeons. I know Miss Alaska runs some of these events every so often for people who want to get into these. So there's opportunities for that. And I'll just extend this out to the general community, is that if you want to be part of a community that has these kind of things available to you, that's a perfect reason to join Clan Quest heading into the new year. You know, we always talk about these sorts of things, how you hear it from the insurance agencies that the new year is the perfect time to upgrade your insurance, right? Well, if you're not exactly happy with the way your current clan is going, the new year is around the corner. We're in the Christmas season right now. But despite that, any time of year, if you want to be part of a community, Clan Quest is a perfect community. And this is to everybody else out there listening, because I know a good number of people who are asking questions and are going to be listening to this are already Clan Quest. But if you're not, just join the Clan Quest chat channel in game. If you like what you see, ask one of the silver keyed ranks how to join, and we'll point you to the application form, and we'll get you part of this setup that we have going on here. So
we don't say Clan Quest, Clan Best for nothing.
That's a very good saying. I'm glad we have that. Glad we have that.
I will say, on the PVM side, Clan Quest has been trying a little bit more recently to help get people into PVM. So we've had semi-regular Angel of Death teams going.
You guys had a good run last week with the free Death Week, didn't you?
Yeah, we had four sessions planned. One unfortunately had to be canceled, but we ultimately did three sessions. I attended one of them just in voice. I was at one in game that went for 3 hours. I think we got a drop and everyone was pretty invigorated, but it was a lot of fun. It was a really good learning experience. I know for myself and for a lot of other people, had their first real kills at AOD. Mm-hmm. And it really helps to remove some of the fear factor of some of these bosses.
Yeah.
And I know Shane, you and Sirion did an ED1 run.
That was amusing. It was actually Sirion's first time.
Oh man.
That was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah. What part?
All of it.
Okay, fair enough.
It's all pretty good. The panicking at Masuda was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's exactly the same thing. And comparing this to when I went first week, you know, huge, huge fundamental different change in terms of that. And that's just from picking up a few things along the way from Clan Quest. So there you have it. That's the whole discussion around this question.
Speaking of the AOD that has been going on in Clan Quest recently, I was actually also watching along and I saw a clanny that joined last year not being able to do the Pieces of Hate boss fight. Doing her first AOD kills, she's learned to do rots through the clan. She regularly destroys me in PvP these days, I must add, which is quite something. But yeah, quite a combat evolution through Clan Quest.
You could even say an evolution of combat.
Yes, couldn't you? Vi Nightshade, who asked this question, is actually, as it happens, one of the people who will devote a lot of time and effort to helping you get your PVM set up together. I saw him just last week devoting hundreds of words to helping this one guy and watching his kills and offering feedback.
Yeah.
And yeah, there are a lot of people in Clan Quest who will do that, so it's really excellent. Great community to be part of, and that's what you need to improve, hey?
I love it when these questions turn into an advertisement of some sort. All right, last question from Imperialis. If you could create a new quest line in RuneScape, what would it be? Or a continuation of an existing one? Tanis, go.
If it was a continuation, I have to know what happens to the gnomes. But after a few lighthearted quests, I would like to see an actual quest line of the human kingdoms and a Song of Fire and Ice kind of epic, with lots of political intrigue and. What?
Okay.
Yeah.
The P word.
Yeah. I don't want that.
But like
in RS.
RuneScape.
Yeah, but, not political in like the real world sense. Political in the Game of Thrones sense.
Oh.
Yeah. God, no. I have enough of the other crap in real life. No. This is like, you know, King. What's his name? From Varrock is going to be like ticked off at the Duke of Lumbridge because they both want to get with the daughter over in our dome. You know, I don't know, whatever the thing is, but that's what I'm looking for.
All right, fair enough. And you know, that would be an evolution in Irish traditional storytelling, which is right in line with where they want to go. So I'll give you that. As for me, a series I'd like to see continued would be the Elemental Workshop series. I just love the silence when that is brought up.
No, genuinely, I approve.
Okay, good.
I loved Elemental Workshop 4. It's a genuine favorite.
See, Tanis, you were worried we wouldn't have the panel when that quest comes out. It's right here.
Can you find one more member?
What, you want to sit out?
Dude, you don't understand how hard that quest was. I mean, and not. I don't think it was 4. It was, what, 3? The slide puzzle, the 3.
Right.
It's just hours of my life I'll never get back.
Okay. If I was going to put in a storyline that doesn't exist currently, I would like to see what they were going to do with the Godless faction when that was being talked about, when all the Sliske shenanigans were happening, because we kind of just kind of left the Godless behind. They still have a role in Invention, of course, and who knows, maybe after our current Elder God Wars thing, there could be space for the Godless faction to make an appearance.
That's a good one. They hinted at that recently in Once Upon a Time in Gilenor with the Grey Knights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Zerdomes?
Well, if I To be honest, Tannis kind of stole one I was going to say for new quest lines. I would also love to see I'd love to see the human kingdoms interacting a little bit more and flesh that world out more. If I had to pick a unique one, it's a little bit of a cop out, but I'd like to see some exploration in the Ark region in the Eastern Lands, because I feel like that's a very different kind of mythology to what RuneScape has done before. Like the game up till now has very much been sort of the standard fantasy setting, like the same square foot of Tolkien's backyard
right.
that we've been digging into the last 60 years. So it would be really fun to explore what is, to me at least, a very different kind of mythological storytelling that you get with the Eastern Lands.
You might get your chance with that because they made that whole new environment for the final part of Once Upon a Time.
I am hoping. And in terms of continuing a storyline, I mean, so many. If I had to pick just one, I would really like to revisit Mauritania in the Sixth Age.
Oh.
Because I feel like we left that in a good spot with River of Blood, but I would really like to see how that political situation has developed.
That is such a delicate balance they've got going on.
It certainly is.
And quest-caping.
All right. So for the idea of a completely new quest line, well, it's not so much at the moment, it's not so much a quest line as it is a few things that have been thrown about in one quest or another. But I'm really interested in Tarthiad. I think that's how you say it. It's Welsh.
Yeah, home of the elves.
Yes. Yeah, so that got continued in the very slightest degree just earlier this year, I think, with the Serenyak track, when they just casually drop in the fact that, oh yeah, they've got a whole bunch of Avianci chilling there now and helping out the sad, deranged elves that were filling the place beforehand. And there's a lot of opportunity for interesting storylines there, because you've got a former civilization that has been in absolute ruin for thousands of years, and how can you get that back on its feet? How can you even begin to rebuild and bring those people back to a state of baseline sanity, for one thing, and
yeah, that's
being
good.
Able to, yeah,
that's fair.
But yeah, and for continuing a quest line, I don't know, I think I'm not particularly invested in a lot of the stalled quest lines. And
yeah,
I think
you have a point, because I think you go back in these and everybody remembers them fondly from when they first played them. But if you played them now, I wonder how they hold up. And, you know, I'll be doing some of that in the new year. So
yeah,
we'll
see. A lot of them do not. A lot of them have not aged terribly well.
Oh, yeah.
So which one?
I think I will go for the Elemental Workshop series, honestly, because yeah, there's incredibly good puzzles where you actually have to think and get into this system it presents you with. I'd say I really enjoyed Elemental Workshop 4, and I think that's largely for the programming puzzle they had. I enjoyed that sense of a magical computer being laid out with stone blocks around you. That was fantastic. And I love the sense of magical science that pervades the entire thing.
Because if you look sometimes, and I don't know if you feel this way or don't sometimes, but sometimes if you look at some of the stuff you write for computer code, it does feel that way in real life, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. It certainly does.
Hey, congratulations on working magic.
Alrighty.
Yeah, working is maybe a bit strong.
Yeah. So,
stumbling into
tempting magic.
So I want to thank Imperial here, because we just built the panel for the Elemental Workshop quest when that
comes
out.
See you there.
May we never have to use it.
All right.
Mod Doctor's left, though.
So. Yeah, well,
I think it was said that Mod Doctor didn't really have
no,
too much
he didn't
to
have
do
much
with
to
it,
do
just
with it.
Yeah,
but
that is greater.
But the backstory for the next ones is written. All it would need to do is be picked up appropriately. So
yeah,
that was a concern of mine that was allayed when he when he left, and he actually replied to the tweets on that matter. But nonetheless, I had to end the year with an appropriate question segment, so thank you everybody for your questions. We're going to move on to our picks of the week right now. We're running up against that time barrier, so we'll just run through these quickly. Tanis, you have a music video for us. What do you got?
I have a music video. It is a band called Ministry. It is in the world of metal, and this is a remake of a very famous anti-Vietnam War song called Search and Destroy by Iggy Pop. So new version, Ministry, check them out. Pretty cool.
Nice. It's not my kind, but of course we'll put the link in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com for anybody who wants to have a listen to that. Mine is something I really wished I could have got into. I forgot about it until the start of last weekend, and I haven't had time to get into it yet, but it's something that runs every December. Normally when we talk about advent calendars, we talk about things like gifts that we get when you open the advent calendar on RS, or in the case of games, you might get a little item or something like that. But this one is called the Advent Calendar of Code. And what this one is that if you are interested in programming, this is a good way of maybe trying out a new programming language or kind of just pushing yourself a little bit. Each year they run one of these, and it's a series of programming problems that runs from December 1st all the way through the 25th, and it provides you with a prompt, and you can tackle it in whichever language you want. And I did one of the ones back in 2017, I think. I would like to do this year's one. We'll have to wait and see if I can round the time to do it up after Christmas. But nonetheless, if you're interested in programming, definitely have a look at this, and you can find it at adventofcode.com.
Taking a look at those puzzles right now. This looks pretty interesting.
Yeah, they are. They are. And that's precisely what it is, because, you know, most times when you're dealing with code, it's just, you know, hey, write this, implement this. And many people consider themselves fortunate if they actually get to solve these puzzles. Sometimes you don't. But, so this is a nice opportunity to get back to doing that.
So, learn things along the way.
Yeah.
Keep your skills sharp if you had previously learned them.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, also a good opportunity to practice with a different language as well if you wanted to do it that way. So,
for sure.
Pick of the week, Questscaping.
Yes, so I am here to recommend Stellaris, which is a good old Paradox strategy game. And it's something I've been playing a lot recently. They had a nice aquatics update, which so essentially Stellaris is an empire builder game across the galaxy. You start as one spacefaring civilization, you expand, you meet others, maybe you get along with them, maybe you really, really don't. Maybe you start a massive empire, like galaxy-spanning war, and take over the entire thing, or maybe you get destroyed by this crisis that appears near the end of the game. Usually in my case, it's the latter, but I'm getting better at it. And yeah, I find it really good. People tend to like it from one of two perspectives, which is either strategy, where you play it as you might play any other strategy game you could name, or you play it role-playing wise, where you get invested in whatever lore you are building
sure.
for your alien race. And yeah, and there's a lot of fantastic flavor that makes it really interesting to play in that way, to create an alien race and play them out across the galaxy however you choose. And recently I've been playing one of the new backgrounds that they've introduced as part of the aquatics update, which starts your alien race out with a space dragon orbiting their home star. And you don't know how to talk to this space dragon. You don't know what it intends or how to keep it happy. And you've got to figure things out as you go along in the process of expanding your way across
yeah.
the stars.
I know Stellaris, I think from my perspective, is one of the more complicated Paradox games. And the funniest thing that ever happened to me is that our entire galaxy got taken over by the AI near the end of it.
Yeah. That can happen. It's, yeah. I'm currently having a bit of a struggle trying to play relatively pacifist, but also finding myself absolutely boxed in by people who hate me.
That makes sense, given just the nature of the game. All right. And Zerdons?
So I have a four-part podcast mini-series called Why Modern Blockbusters Bore.
Oh.
So this is exactly what it says on the tin, talking about the big-budget movies, so your Star Warses, your Marvel movies, your DC movies. If you watch one of those and it leaves you kind of cold, this series will sort of will delve into why that is. So it's a four-part series. They go through first characters, so characters that maybe don't act in logical ways. They are designed so they're not relatable. They don't really fit in the world. Episode two is story structure, so a lot of how the plotting doesn't necessarily make sense, how there can be a disconnect between action scenes and exposition scenes, for instance, things like that. Episode three is world building. So you get into situations where, for instance, when you haven't really considered your world building properly and you introduce elements that make past story elements not make sense. So one of the examples that was brought up was the big Avengers game or Avengers Endgame that came out a couple of years ago, where they introduced time travel in the last movie. And now in every movie after that, in the back of your mind is going to be, well, why can't they just use time travel to solve this?
Yeah.
And how does that play into, how does that affect the storytelling going forward? And then episode four is the one I found the most interesting. It is just subtitled Why. And it's kind of some inside baseball on how modern blockbusters get made and the root cause of a lot of these problems that they talk about, which is the economics of blockbuster movies are such that you pretty much have to make all the money in the universe or your movie is a failure. And they made a specific example that I thought was incredible, and that was the Han Solo Star Wars movie, which was, by the way the studio reacted to it, was a failure. Like, when that movie dropped, everyone hated it. Disney canceled all of their standalone movies that they had already planned and committed to or made some comments about. But if you actually look at the economics, that movie made $400 million at the box office. Like, not even counting merchandise, not counting home video, not counting streaming. Box office tickets, $400 million. And that movie was still a failure.
Financially a success, but when it comes down to it at the end of the day, it's just it's not what the studio wanted.
Oh, no, no. It wasn't even a financial success. It barely made its budget back. It had like a $350 million budget or something. And that's production budget. That's not counting merchandising.
And
so if you account for advertising and all that, it lost money.
And the question then that always comes to my mind is, why are we in that case? And I guess this podcast episode would answer that. And, you know, I was saying in pre-show that unless I know precisely what I'm getting, I'd rather spend the 2 hours of watching a movie doing something else, honestly, in most cases in this day and age.
Yeah, and there are some movies that do this sort of stuff well, and they do bring up some of those examples of these big blockbusters that are worth doing. Mad Max Fury Road is one that gets brought up a lot, that does a lot of these things very well. But I won't spoil too much about it. I encourage you to go and listen to it. It is quite a time investment. It's 4 2-hour podcast episodes.
Just like ours.
Hey.
But it's an interesting look at how movies are made and why movies don't always work anymore.
And I think that's going to be very important going forward, because I've had that sense probably for about the last 6 years or so, just in terms of any time I watched a movie, and it's like, I would have rather been doing something else for the last 2 hours, honestly, in most cases. So.
Yeah,
perhaps that's just me, but nonetheless, so let's move on to our achievements right now. We do have a few of those, and it feels like a double XP weekend, but it's not. So starting off, we have Out of Darkmoor with 99 ranged on December 15th. Crying Wolf, also with 99 strength. Q-Bond, 008, with 99 Slayer. Queen Adina got 99 Woodcutting. Tani Kiat got 99 Dungeoneering. And Twisted Soul got 99 Divination.
All right, then moving on December 14th, we have Darkest Night with 99 Thieving and 99 Strength. Then we have Dr. Reggie with 99 Dungeoneering. And then we have Ezel with 120 Farming on the 14th. And then God Shaman with 99 Hunter. Azo Yo with 120 Thieving. And Uber Plastic with 99 Runecrafting. And Zabros with 99 Runecrafting.
Wonderful.
On December 13th, we have Aleo Sith with 99 Attack, Atmo Hua with 99 Magic, Delenda Est with 120 Farming, Deltar Polo with 99 Woodcutting, Dr. Reggie with 99 Fletching, Lao Surth with 120 Farming, Quest Kitty with 99 Herblore, and Tapping Spy with 99 Prayer. Deep breath. December 12th, we had nothing. December 11th, we had Atmo Hua again with 99 Constitution, Dianima with 120 Herblore, Fritz Kree, 99 Archaeology, and Tani Kiat, 120 Invention.
Well done.
All right. Darkest Night continues, 99s. Well, December the 10th, she got 99 Defense. Woohoo! 99 Mining for iBattle Slash on December 10th. Truly a Weeb got 99 Construction. Zadones got 120 Herblore. Congratulations.
You feeling a hole in your pocket?
I did not spend that much, actually.
Oh, good.
Actually, I mostly lived, to be honest with you, after I got the pet.
All right, Duramax got 120 Dungeoneering on December the 9th. God Shaman got 99 Smithing on that same day. Quests are really great. Got 120 Hunter on December the 9th. That's their name in the Clan Quest Discord.
Otherwise known as Quests or Shit.
Yeah. Tapping Spy got 99 Constitution. Tiny Kid got 99 Strength. Tiny Kid got 99 Attack as well. And Zanthan Gun got 99 Divination.
Sounds like you're about to break into song with that. And I think that'd be appropriate as we start wrapping this up. I guess, Lester Dones, what have you been up to aside from this 120 Herblore?
Well, 120 Herblore was very exciting because it was the last thing I needed for the completionist cape.
Holy cow.
Yeah. So that was very fun. Now I'm slightly at a loss. I've sort of been poking at the Trimrex, so I guess that's going to be my next big thing.
Barbarian Assault offer remains open.
I will definitely be taking you up on that. Mostly I've been doing, Statue of Damarok that I finished up. I've been sort of poking at Uncharted Islands on the salty grind. And this week, I've been taking advantage of Frank's free deaths to push some Telos in Rage. So I'm up to 75% in Rage.
Hey! Nice.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to go there this week, but haven't got around to it yet.
Anything, would recommend.
Yeah, anything else, Sir Dones?
No, that's about where I'm at.
As for me, I've been continuing to work on the Blessed Flask, got all the harmonic dust in place, and now I should have started this sooner, and it's just a question of waiting now for the sandstone, the crystal and the red sandstone, yep, to finish that off. But with that, you know, just a couple of Reaper tasks here and there, but I've also, of course, been focusing on the Yak Track and the Golden Party Hat Hunt on both characters, and with that, I hit 75 farming on the alt today.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that is now actually the highest skill there, which is, that made me happy to see that. And it feels a lot faster than it was before, even with a player-owned farm that's not obscenely broken. But I think over the Christmas period, of course, I do still have a standing offer at some point to David is going to teach me Duo Virago. And on Free Ooh. Death Week, we are also going to go to Raksha as well. So I got Woo-hoo. I got a boatload Ooh. Of PVM in front of me on this. So depending on how things go, we might have some interesting stories for the first for the first run of the year.
Good luck.
How about you, Tanis? What about you?
You know, kind of same old, but still working my way through the Yak track. Still going back to mining every skill and chill I get. And yeah, that's it. I'm just building up huge stockpiles of what will end up being Elder Ring in the end.
All right, fair enough. And questscaping.
Hey, also chipping away at the Yak track, which I don't usually do, but okay. I don't know. I've been doing it.
What changed your mind this time?
I think I saw there was a Golden Party Hat shard at level 15, and then I just sort of, I've been going ever since. It's got into the rhythm of it, I guess. And it was funny, Tanis mentions the mining thing first, kill and kill, because that is also what I've been doing with it, which is nice. Work sort of casually picking back up my far-flung dreams of actually making my own masterwork. And Ooh. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I've also been taking advantage of the Frank's Free Deaths, and I have also been working on my Telos, which I used to do a lot more of a few years ago. And this past week, I got my first 100% kill in about 3 years. So
that's
I'm
when
glad
they
to have
phase
got back
five,
to that.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that's the first time where the kill times actually get recorded because you have finally done the full
right.
fight.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm glad to be getting back into that. It also, I can't go without mentioning the Clan Quest Advent Calendar, which we have been working on to raise money for Charity Water. And we're at over $500 last time I checked, and we're halfway through the month now, which is pretty good. The target is $1,000, and I'll be streaming some RuneScape over the weekend, streaming the Death of Chivalry. And I think I'm going to do something where if you do a certain donation, you can Ooh. Make a certain choice in the quest, because that is a very choice-heavy quest, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
So yeah, that'll be interesting to go about.
That sounds good. And speaking of that, I will be on the stream on Sunday. That's when we got the Star Trek Online Christmas stream scheduled, hey. Kind of as a culmination of all the previous Star Trek Online streams that we did this year. You can, of course, find those at twitch.tv/clanquest. But I think it's time that we wrap this show up and say farewell to everybody. We'll be back next week with the PVM meta special looking at 2021 in review. And of course, if you want the podcast delivered automatically to you, please do subscribe. We're on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Pocket Casts, and YouTube, of course, at youtube.com/rsbnb. Please do give us a like and subscribe there. Definitely helps the channel out. But as I'll say, have a Merry Christmas, everybody, and we'll be back the next 2 weeks with two special episodes of RSBNB Update. So we'll see you live next time in 2022. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.
Bye now.